Tonight's episode of Shockwaves is brought to you by Fright Rags. Join us as Fright Rags unleashes their Evil Dead 1 and 2 collections this week, featuring highly anticipated reprints of classic designs, as well as brand new items like lounge pants and hats. All these groovy items are available exclusively at fright-rags.com. Shockwaves listeners can get 10% off when they use codes SHOCKWAVES2020. Again, that's SHOCKWAVES2020 for 10% off. Again, the website is fright-rags.com. Tonight's episode of Shockwaves is brought to you by Fangoria.com. It's getting a little crazy out there right now, so Fangoria is offering a free 2-month digital membership to everyone. Go to Fangoria.com for more information and make an account. Then pour over all the exclusive articles, interviews, and reviews on the site, as well as original video content and podcasts. You'll even have access to high-resolution scans of the first 15 issues of the original run of Fangoria magazine, and counting. Go to Fangoria.com now and start your free digital membership. And if you're looking to add to your social distancing watch list, Fangoria's latest movie, VFW, is now available to stream on demand, and Satanic Panic is now available to watch on Shudder. Tonight's episode of Shockwaves is also brought to you by Wellgo Entertainment. From the writer and director of I Saw the Devil comes a film with bone-crunching, blood-spurting action, says Birth Movies Death. The Witch Subversion is a serious revenge thriller with kick-ass bloody action, now on digital, Blu-ray, and DVD from Wellgo Entertainment. And if you're interested in advertising on Shockwaves, email us at shockwaves@blumhouse.com for more info. That is shockwaves@blumhouse.com.
Welcome to episode 182 of Shockwaves. I am your host, Ryan Turek, and I'm joined by my co-host, Rebecca McKendry.
Hey, I am alive.
That we're thankful for that. Elric Kane.
I am at the in Jason Blum's office on his desk. That's awesome. No one's here.
It's a ghost town. Ghost town. We also have Mr. Rob G.
Literal ghost town. Where is he?
He's working on it.
He's working on it. So if you haven't already been able to tell, we're all working remotely and still bringing you Shockwaves, which we hope to do week after week, because through all of this insanity that's going on in the world, we at least want to be consistent, keep talking about horror movies, keep being positive, and keep giving you film recommendations and hopefully a guest or two to enjoy week after week. So we were testing out the technology that we have before us. Rob may have fallen off. I don't know. I know he's messing around with it. But
I think we should, obviously things are not normal, but hopefully we can actually try to bring some normalcy to the show. So I think we have a great guest ahead. Hopefully he will not have any issues. But it'll be interesting because it is Lee Whannell who directed The Invisible Man for Blumhouse. And it's an interesting week to record this episode because it was announced earlier this week that Jason Blum and Universal are going to be bringing The Hunt and Invisible Man to streaming.
It's just such a strong idea anyway, and a really daring one because that's never done. It's always, since the start of time, it's been, okay, well, it goes theatrical, then there's a wait, then it goes to physical distribution, and then it might go online. Yeah. But to just say, fuck all that, we're just going to take this to you now. I mean, you can tell two things from that they're really trying to be innovative with it, but at the same time that box offices and theatricals are in a scary place right now because of this. Yeah. I mean, like AMC, I think is now, they just gave me credit on my AMC app. So I assume they're shut down.
Yeah, so, AMC, Regal, Alamo Drafthouse, basically box office has been shut down. Yeah. So Invisible Man has made the money it's going to make. The Hunt has made the money it's going to make.
They're doing it with Trolls as well. My daughter was super excited because Trolls is coming on the new Trolls film.
And, I think, keep in mind, it could dictate what happens in the future of all the other companies. Like if it goes well, it could really become the model during this period.
Absolutely, and I think Birds of Prey moved up its release window, and I think that I read hours before we started recording that the Vin Diesel movie Bloodshot, which is an entirely different studio, is now coming out this Friday, I think, on streaming. So
there's a lot of
studios following that.
Well, it would make a lot of sense.
Yeah. Oh, go! No, sorry. We're still getting used to this technology, guys.
We can't see each other, so it's a little blind. I was just going to say indies, obviously studios, one model where obviously the price point has to be higher. But for things like, you know, Saint Maud or A24 type titles, they could really cash in. This could really be a great stream of revenue for the films like that with a captive audience at home. We'll see. I hope people utilize it because we are bored.
I would love to see some of those upcoming indie titles like Saint Maud or Coca-Da that have these like pending theatricals right now that they've pushed. I've seen dates get pushed. It seems like such a smart move to kind of head online and just kind of captivate the audience right now while all of us are just literally sitting around looking for stuff to watch on TV.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's a great segue, Becca, because I know, for Blumhouse, we are all working remotely from our home, but it has given me a lot of time, obviously not just to develop films, but also catch up on a lot of streaming and TV and movies that I've got. I mean, I've got a stack of blues a mile wide that I'm ready to dig into. So let's start with you, Becca. What have you been catching up on?
So I'm doing exactly what you were talking about, where I have a stack of blues that I am digging into, just stuff that I'd gotten screener copies of that I'm always like, well, someday I'll sit down and watch them. I will say I did watch, just because it seemed, you know, of its time right now, apropos, I did watch the entire pandemic series on Netflix. I was having problems getting through it because it seemed a little too real. But I did finally make it through. And yeah, it's definitely kind of cathartic and shocking. And I know it's not horror, but you know what? I'm going to put it in terms of horror in this regard. So we are the hot co-ed who just had sex with her boyfriend in the woods. And that's kind of how the whole thing plays out is, and we're fucked. So yeah, it was very bleak and it was a very kind of realistic portrayal of everything that's going on right now. But it did kind of really point out the gravity of it and how infections are spread and how like stupid shit, like my mail, like even up to yesterday, I was still like, I'm not going to touch anything in the outside world. But then I just go out and like grab my mail and all my Amazon packages. And then after watching that, I was like, oh, that's a problem. So even though not technically horror, it's definitely still been on my mind. So digging into my horror Blu-rays. So I'm going to start with one that I know Elric watched as well. And this is The Passion of Darkly Noon. This one came out in 1995, and this is from director Philip Ridley. And this is the guy who did The Reflecting Skin. And for a long time, this one was super hard to find, and Arrow just did like a fancy schmance blue of it. I will say that as soon as I posted about this online, there were people who freaking love this movie. I went in with really high hopes because I love Reflecting Skin so much. This was no Reflecting Skin for me.
No, it doesn't hold up quite as well. It's like Reflecting Skin's like a weird little masterpiece, but like Brendan Fraser's casting's a little weirder as some guy who kind of comes out of the forest with no memory.
Wanders. He's part of some like religious cult, and he remembers that there was some type of violent thing that happens with the cult that killed his parents. And he's running from them now. He's wandering through the woods of Appalachia. He ends up in, I think it's supposed to be North Carolina, kind of emerging into this society of people who build coffins for a living. And as he's being nursed back to health by Ashley Judd's character, he falls in love with her, but then Viggo Mortensen shows up and she's in love with him. But there's this other girl there who sells the coffins that's in love with Brandon Fraser, but then their mom's there too. And then there's something with a giant shoe that they set on fire. And then at the end, there's like circus people It's crazy. I can best define it as like a love tryst with some trippiness. The cinematography I did not enjoy. It was very bright and overexposed and just not, it felt bizarre to me. It was a difficult watch for me, to be honest. Like, I was not comfortable. I never found myself engaged. And I did think that a lot of it was Brandon Fraser's performance as well. He just never seemed to gel for me. I was constantly aware I was watching a movie. But that said, like, some people love this one. So Elric, any thoughts on it?
No, I mean, I just think it, I haven't seen it in like a few years. I saw it on VHS last because it had been stuck on VHS. I mean, I love the director's first film. The director's more of an art house director. He wrote the film The Craze. He made, I think, only three movies his whole career. And he was from the art world, the actual art world, like fine art. And just reflecting skin hits it. Dick Pope shot that one. And so I think that's why it's so good looking. This one just doesn't quite work. I remember Ashley Judd being kind of a sexy Ashley Judd thing, mm-hmm. and being that part's appealing. And Viggo's always interesting that way. I think with Brendan Fraser, you watch him in The Mummy and you go, oh, wow, they nailed his personality with the material. And then other times I've seen him in movies where it doesn't quite work.
Encino Man or Bust.
Oh, buddy. Yeah, I'm down. But yeah, that one doesn't really work for me. In short.
All right. What was the name of that one again, Becca?
That was Passion of Darkly Noon.
Passion of Darkly Noon. I got to say, I have never heard of that fucking movie. Elric, what have you been dialing into?
I watched a couple interesting ones. Thirst, which I realized I always thought all these years I'd seen, an Australian film from 1979 vampire film, and it's rad. It's streaming everywhere on Amazon. I know me and Becca talked about it before, and I thought I had seen it, and then I was like, nope, definitely not. So basically, it's a modern day set film, and this woman, you know, corporate elite kind of woman, comes home one day, and she starts to realize she is the descendant of Elizabeth Bathory, and there's this cult who are basically vampire, like kind of imitators, but they believe deeply in the religion of vampirism, led by like David Hemmings is one of them, Henry Silva's in there, and they are trying to convince her that she should taste blood, because if she tastes it, she will become like them and remember this lineage that she has, but she doesn't want to try it. So most of the movie is her resisting their advances, and then it's when it starts to turn like really horror, it's really good. It's like almost Daughters of Darkness-y. I was kind of expecting something campy, but it's really not campy. They play it really straight, and it's a good movie. Like, if people are looking for like almost like Martin is another one I'd compare it to. Mm-hmm. It's a really solid movie, and I like this one a lot, and definitely hadn't seen it. So Amazon, I believe, is where I saw it. I don't want to spoil it for where it goes, but it's, yeah, no, really good. I saw a couple of good like 70s movies that I hadn't seen before, so it was kind of always a nice surprise when you catch those again.
Nice. Very nice, very nice.
I quickly rescind my Encino Man in replace of Airheads. Proceed.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, I've been digging into a bunch of things. I'll start with Jacob's Ladder, which I haven't seen in a very long time. I remember it's one of those very somber, sad, somewhat depressing movies, but for some itch, I just wanted to kind of, the Adrian Lynn kind of horror aspect, I certainly had a hunger for. And so I dropped that in. And yeah, I mean, like, it is arguably one of, you know, probably maybe top three horror movies of the 90s that are incredibly effective. I think Candyman ranks as, in terms of pure horror, I think it is probably probably the best. I consider the best of the 90s. Favorite being Scream, but Jacob's Ladder is a close second. You know, and this is a movie that is about Tim Robbins plays a postman who is a Vietnam vet, and he lives in New York. And throughout the course of the film, he starts to, you know, just witness these very strange visions. You know, visions that I feel have impacted, influenced, and you know, sent other directors creatively soaring with you know, these kind of strange demonic visions of you know, jittery heads and weird things.
William Malone effect.
House on Haunted Hill, which we talked about.
Oh God, yeah, and that was one of the first movies that I remember seeing that in, The Glitchy People.
Yeah.
That was one of the very first ones. And I remember it just being, it's a guy in some type of cage, like shaking his head back and forth.
Yeah.
And I remember that fucking me up the first time I saw it. I like on my parents' like shitty VHS player, rewinding it back to see what I saw again. And then the guy with no eyeballs, just like my brain melted.
Well, the surgery scene, surgery. Mm-hmm. Oof. Scary anyway.
Yeah. You know? Well, it's still incredibly effective, and it's still incredibly emotional and powerful. You know, because what happens is Tim Robbins is kind of mourning the loss of a son, and Elizabeth Peña plays his new girlfriend. And, you know, everybody in Tim Robbins' life represents something deeply emotional, and what you know, and you kind of get these flashes back to Vietnam, and there's this mystery that's being built about what happened to his platoon when they were on a mission. So it all comes to a head in a third act. And it's kind of interesting because the movie almost feels like it wraps up at the end of the second act, and it kind of just slows down dramatically as Tim Robbins' character starts to process everything that's going on. And he has to make a major decision in his life. And it's incredibly well done. I mean, like, it's one of those very mature, very effective and well-directed horror films. I mean, like, it's definitely one that stands the test of time.
Definitely. And it's not a new story. I mean, this is one that we saw even in Twilight Zone. It's kind of the same concept as Bridge at Owl Creek.
Yes.
Exactly. But that said, it is so well done that I don't even look at it as like a repetition. And we've seen the same plot that is used in Jacob's Ladder since then. I could name five other movies that do that. But Jacob's Ladder tops them all just purely in terms of craft. Like, I don't even put it in the same category as most of the others.
Yeah, and like Candyman, it's actually about something. You know, it actually explores PTSD in the same way as Candyman does gentrification. And, you know, it's hard to, when you took out the horror elements and still would have a great drama, there really aren't that many movies each decade that get to do that. And this one has that. Yeah, it's a great film.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting. It's like a little baby Macaulay Culkin, and Danny Aiello is great in it. I didn't realize... I was looking up Elizabeth Peña, who plays his girlfriend. I didn't know she passed. Like, I did not know she had passed away. And I kind of
a couple years ago, right? Like 5 years ago or something?
Like 4 or 5 years ago. Deep, very sad, very sad. Sad. It seemed like she had a sad ending, let's say. I kind of went down a information rabbit hole about her. And she was a great actress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, there was that. And then I caught up on the Crazies, Brett Eisner's remake of the George Romero movie. That was my, that was my quarantine movie. I was like, okay, if I'm going to do one of these movies, I'm just going to go kind of full, pseudo zombie, government infection kind of thing.
Does that one hold up? I always liked that one.
It does. It does. I mean, like, there's some really terrific set pieces in that film. I mean, like, there's a lot of scary stuff, and it's grounded by, you know, Timothy Oliphant, who's the lead in it. But very, very confident retelling, and probably one of the better remakes to come along in the last 15 years.
Nice.
Yeah.
Elric, what did you watch?
Oh, I saw another one from the 70s last night called Night of the Devils by Giorgio Ferroni. Fantastic. Again, Amazon. Sometimes I'll scroll through Amazon, see something I don't recognize, quickly look it on Letterboxd, and if it's getting some 4 stars, I'll be like, okay. This will interest a lot of people because it is a story based on the Verdelak short story, which is by Tolstoy, which was the story in Black Sabbath by Bava, the last one.
Verdelak.
Yeah. So it's about basically a guy gets, he breaks down, his car breaks down, he falls upon a family living remotely, and they keep talking about like this kind of old witch type figure. And what you realize is she's actually this kind of a low key vampire, kind of like a Messiah of Evil vibe. And every time they kill one of the family member will come back to kill or drink the blood of, and then turn another family member who they want to be with forever. And so you basically, it's kind of like this weird group who all are becoming vampires and want to stay together, basically, including children. And this guy stumbled upon it, and, you know, it's kind of stuck in the middle of it. But the effects are very much with that whole, you know, putting powder on your face, looking like kind of cheap, but it's really effective when the mood is right. It's better than a lot of effects for a vampire film, I think. It's somewhere between a zombie and a vampire. It's hard to call it straight vampire. But if you're a fan of Black Black Sabbath, I think it'd be very worth checking this out. It's a very different version. It's more modern because the character is a modern 70s character stuck in a remote village. But again, I love these ones when you stumble upon them with no expectations. Especially like the last 10 minutes. The last 10 minutes really, really got interesting.
Nice. I had a couple others.
Did we get a hold of Rob yet? Is Rob still hanging in there?
Yeah, Rob is connecting to his other laptop at 7 o'clock.
Okay, cool. Sweet.
I think this is great to have Ernie is in the show. If the virus has given us
Ernie, welcome. So I saw a couple of other things this week because I have been working through my Blu-ray titles so much. So I'm going to start with one that. I remember that the box cover used to get me, and Ryan even mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. And then Ryan mentioning the box cover got me this time, which was Future Kill.
Oh, yeah.
So for years, I remember when I would look at the Future Kill box cover on the store shelf, I would rent it. I probably rented it 4 or 5 times, thinking, that's a dope cover. It's all done by Geiger, and it looks beautiful. And thinking like, this has to be a great movie. I think I probably rented it 3 or 4 times and each time was really disappointed by it. And then Ryan, on the episode that we did at Slashbacks, you even said something about how the Future Kill box cover always got you. And then while you were saying that, I was like, yeah, that was a really good box cover. I don't remember the movie though. I think I'm going to watch it again. And I did. And I have fallen for it again. 40 years later, it's still getting me. So Future Kill, 1985, amazing box cover by Giger. Stars Ed Neal from Texas Chainsaw Massacre. The whole setup is that it's a group of frat boys hunted by these kind of post-apocalyptic mutants that they call themselves protesters. They're protesting something. I have no idea what. Ed Neal is the lead of them. His name is Splatter in the movie. They're supposed to look kind of like mutant punks. And these frat boys go to the city and these post-apocalyptic mutant people decide to chase them and hunt them. And that's about all I got. It's kind of like Judgment Night, but not good. So yeah, that is Future Kill. It definitely does not live up to the box cover. There were some endearing moments. It definitely was like the acting was a bit rough through most of it. It had some really cool effects. I mean, well, I'll say intended effects. The effects were intended to be cool. It had really big effects pieces with like exploding heads and things like that. It was a little below trauma grade. But yeah, they definitely, I could see what they were trying to do. So that's Future Kill. Really cool box cover.
How did you watch Future Kill?
I have a bootleg of it and I didn't even realize this. I didn't even realize what it was as you were saying that last week, cause this is notoriously hard to find. Like the DVD I even checked on Amazon is going for like, $80. So after you'd mentioned that, I remembered that in the aforementioned stack of Blues and DVDs that I had there, somebody at some convention had handed me a copy of it and been like, this is a burn. This isn't available anywhere, but you should totally see this movie. It's hard to find. And so I remembered that I had that sitting on my desk. So I'm more than willing to pass it to you, Rye. If you need to fall for it one more time.
Yeah. I haven't revisited that in a while. Please. I would love to check it out.
Yeah. So
then send a carrier pigeon since we can't see each other.
No doubt.
Across the valley. And my hawk will intercept your carrier pigeon and carry it to me.
You got it. Okay. Perfect. So Future Kill. I will get that to you.
Elric, what else you got?
I'll just do 2 quickies. Did you guys ever see Kevin Costner's The New Daughter?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, I have. Yes.
Okay, so Dick had this one, and he kept saying, "I hear there's a monster in it." I hear that, and I was like, "I've seen that cover. There's no monster in that movie, but it is. It's a full. I mean, we both kind of landed like it's okay. It has a really cool premise. Actually, I think Becca would love the premise. I think you'd love the setup. It's basically Costner's wife has left him or something. He's got 2 young kids. Moves to this big. He's a writer, like a Dean Koontz, I like to think. In this, he's moving to this place in South Carolina, and there's this giant mound of dirt in the back of their yard. And it turns out it's kind of like this weird burial mound from a Native American legend that were these kind of like weird tree monster creatures living underneath. And what's weird is it wastes no time. They move into the house And seriously, like 10 minutes into the movie, there's a freaking monster on the roof, like crawling around. You're like, holy shit. Like,
what's it called? Because you had me at Tree Monster.
Yeah, yeah. It's called The New Daughter. It's from 2009. It's by one of the Wreck people. I think it's one of the writers of the original Wreck, Louis Berdejo. And it's the girl, his daughter, is played by the girl from Pan's Labyrinth, which is interesting.
Oh, wow.
And so the setup's really interesting. There's a terrible scene about three quarters of the way through where scientists come for one scene, and it is just like embarrassing. It's like it stands out like such a sore thumb to the rest of the movie. These like academic scientists who just, and you know, it's terrible. But there's some of the horror is interesting. So the girl becomes kind of obsessed with the mound, and eventually these things kind of take you over, somewhat possess you, slash, it's a little, I don't want to say, be so harsh as to say it's rapey, but it is a little weird.
Yeah, That was my takeaway, is like they were using the girl for nefarious purposes.
And she's underage, and it feels very strange to infer it. Feels weird. So it's definitely got some very kind of, it does have something dark going under that surface. It's a little disappointing where it delivers, but Costner's actually really good in it. And it kind of, and I think the concept's really interesting. So it wasn't like a write-off. I think it was solid, but not a home run that it could have been. I think you might actually kind of dig it, weirdly enough.
Plus, you mentioning it just reminded me there was another Kevin Costner horror film that came out maybe a couple of years before this called Mr. Brooks. Do you guys remember
that's a good
that
film.
Oh, yeah, I loved that movie.
Yes, I think that's one of his better recent performances for sure. He's really good in that.
Mr. Brooks was supposed to be a trilogy. And if the first Mr. Brooks did well, they had two other chapters to explore. And I've always wanted to know if, like, the second installment, if that had ever been scripted, because I would love to read it. Definitely one of those kind of, big, but like, I think it was like a typical Hollywood budget movie because it's Kevin Costner, but there was a lot of fun
Debbie
stuff.
Debbie Moore in it. I remember Dane Cook was in it. I think Danielle Panabaker was in it as well.
Mm-hmm.
It was an MGM movie. I'm looking at it right now. The budget was $20
million. Wow.
Yeah.
No, that one's a better film. I think that's actually really tight. Actually, that should be a Shockwaves approved right there for people.
I like that one a lot.
Hey Rob, is it Shockwaves approved? Yes. Okay, great. We're all on board.
We all love Mr. Brooks.
Just so we don't forget, because it was St. Patty's Day last night, I thought it was the perfect time to finally watch listener of the show Patty Murphy's feature debut, The Perished, an Irish film that he had given us the link to at Panic Fest, but we didn't have time to see it live. So I watched it late last night, and it's really interesting. It's like, it's kind of somewhat like it's all about abortion in Ireland, which is obviously super hot button. And about a girl who decides to get an abortion. Her parents are disowning her. Her gay best friend is taking her to this place to recoup. And it turns out this old home that he's taken her to is, this is pretty bleak, but it's the house where 500, abortions had taken place. So babies not being born. And so it's kind of, it walks this very, like the opening feels kind of almost heavy-handed, like a Lifetime thing in some ways, but it makes sense because in that country, it's going to actually really hit, be kind of hard hitting because he's being quite edgy. Here, it might seem a little less so just because it's, at least in our circles, it might not be as big a deal. It's not saying it's not a big deal across America, of course. And then, but then it turns hard into horror. And that's where I started becoming really invested because this kind of creature, it's a full-on creature feature, starts kind of coming for her, and you don't know to what goal, and she calls the father down and he joins her down there, and then it kind of plays out as this interesting, just kind of all unfolds in the last like 30 minutes. And I thought it was a really interesting debut, and there's stuff about it that I could imagine will play very differently in Ireland than it will in other parts of the world. Like, I bet you it is deeply kind of controversial and, probably very thought provoking, down there, which is cool. You know, it's cool that he's pushing that button. So, good job, Perry. Patty. I thought it was quite evocative.
What was this one called again?
It's called The Perished. And I know it's got a VOD through the Horror Collective coming out pretty soon. Well, obviously depending on how things go, but yeah.
Right. Nice. Well, look, I mean, like, look at that poster.
Great poster.
Really good poster.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I mean, like, that's the interesting thing about, like, this kind of current environment is that streaming is going to soar. I mean, like, there is, mm-hmm. I mean, people are just going to be tuning in, and it's definitely the way to go. One thing that I wanted to quickly kind of check in on is what your guys' thoughts are on The Outsider, because I'm two episodes away from The Outsider, and I am a little disappointed by the turn of events.
Keep going. I did the same thing. That's why it took me so long to get to the ending, because I was caught up. Probably I was staying with the show as they were released each week until I was two episodes from the end. And then assuming exactly where you are, I went, ow. And then it took me forever to finish it, which I did just two nights ago. It's worth it. The ending is awesome.
Also, I didn't read it, Brian, so it's harder. If you're being disappointed by something in the translation.
I know. It's nothing about the translation. It's just the execution. I feel like this show could have been... I think the show could have been executed as a feature film or at least three episodes. I mean, like, or do what they did with, what they do with British television, where you're getting like maybe two-hour episodes or something. I don't know. It just, you did not need 10 episodes, because it definitely feels like it treads a lot of water. And there are embellishments to relationships that are from book to screen that just, they're not that strong, and you don't really care. It's just, it's weird. I've been doing one Outsider a night because it moves so sluggishly that I can't do any more than one episode. So I'm going to fulfill it, finish it, and then move on. But I'm kind of,
that's interesting. I'm surprised. Yeah. I know Rob gave it 5 stars on Letterboxd. So we know where he stands. Yeah. And I probably gave it like 4. I really did love it. And I thought where it landed was really interesting. And I think I just also seeing it once a week was a good way to pace it out. I thought Ben Mendelsohn, you know, every time he's on screen, the thing has a bit of a pulse.
He's fantastic. He's fantastic. Yeah.
Wait, how can you rank that on Letterboxd? I'm so intrigued.
I was surprised it popped up. I guess some shows do.
Yeah, that was like Chernobyl. When I looked up Chernobyl, it was on there. So
I'm ranking it now.
Only the cinematic television. You can't do. I bet Friends isn't on there. I'll bet you money.
Well, that's the thing. It's like I between Outsider and then I'm trying to finish up Sabrina, so we can move on to some of the other interesting television that's out there.
Have you watched Marianne yet? I think I might rewatch it if I liked it so much.
I'm so behind, but this is the time to do it.
Yeah. So I have two more that I will discuss quickly. One, just because I know you guys have already seen it. I watched 1990s Night Killer.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, yes. That's right. Yeah. I'd forgotten.
Yes. This one, I think I gave it 2 stars. It Becca, was fun.
You have slighted my family by giving that movie 2 stars.
It may have been 2.5. But it was fun at moments. I will say my favorite part of it was that the movie started and I'm watching it and I'm like 5 minutes in and I literally, yelled to the kitchen and was like, hey, that looks like Virginia Beach. And then as soon as Dave walked in, he goes, Becca, that's Virginia Beach. And then next scene, Virginia Beach Police Department. So that was kind of cool that it is set in Virginia Beach, which is where you go for spring break if you live in Virginia and can't afford to go to like a really nice beach. You go to Virginia Beach. So that was fun. We have Ocean City. There's Nag's Head if you can drive down the coast. But, most of us, especially in seniors, end up at Virginia Beach. Yeah. So I did enjoy the strong Freddy Krueger references with the mask and the slicey hands. It felt very Bruno Mattei. And I'm not familiar as much with Claudio Fragasso, the other guy.
You should be, because he made Trolls too.
Shit, that makes so much fucking sense now, guys. That was just like pure clarity. It's fun in a Vinegar Syndrome kind of way. How did that's kind of my review. It's fun in a Vinegar Syndrome kind of way.
It's one of my favorite discoveries of the last year, thanks to this release. I mean, this movie is pure. Get a group of folks together and just laugh. Now, obviously, you can't do that today.
Nope.
And be responsible and maintain your social distance. But I think on its own, if you're just in the, I think you're still going to get a kick out of it.
Yeah, it was
baffling, weirdo slices of cinema with so many very curious creative choices. I mean, I love this movie so much.
No, and I watched it by myself, even though that, you know, I had other people in the house. I was sitting there by myself the entire time, and it was still one that I did not feel compelled to turn off. I was still captivated. And I can't say that, you know, it wasn't good. There were a lot of bizarre choices, but it was captivating within that. So yeah, it's definitely worth picking up the blue just to see the insanity. And then I also watched the new Severin Blu-ray release of 1975's Astrologer. Elric, give your tagline there.
It's not that astrologer.
Yeah, this is the other astrologer.
Not the one you want to watch that you've heard about in cult circles.
Not the Agfa one, which I have to say, I have not seen. That astrologer.
Well, you can't get it. Yeah, it's only played in theaters and will, as far as we know, never get to play because of rights.
Which is ridiculous. I'm so upset because as soon as I posted up about this astrologer, everybody started saying, oh my gosh, is it? And then all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, I have to see this other astrologer, and then quickly had my hopes down. Yeah. But this one, I was still super intrigued to watch because this was a video nasty. And a couple of years ago, I made it back when I was with Fangoria. I'd made it my mission to watch all of the video nasty films, as many as I could. A lot of them are hard to find, and write about all of them. And so this was one that at the time was kind of hard to find. It was put on the video nasties list under the name Suicide Cult. And now having watched it, I have no freaking clue why it was ever on the video nasties list. It's one of these like killer nun where I think that they just looked at the title and were like, oh, well, that's racy. No, because killer nun has nothing in it either. But this is the same where at best I'm like, I saw somebody's butt. There was like an implication of suicide, but the whole setup is that there's this guy named Alexei, who is this scientist, and everybody says his name differently throughout the entire film, which is kind of fun. His wife, it's very pronounced Alexei, his coworkers, he's Alexei. So yeah, it's fun. But he is a scientist, but he is studying zodiac signs and has somehow been able to use a computer and these zodiac signs to predict the second coming of Christ. And the movie begins 10 days from this baby being born that we think is going to be the second coming of Christ. But at the same time, somehow he pisses off this like satanic cult. I don't think they ever even say Satanist. We're just going to say a cult. He pisses off this evil cult that's happening at the same time. It is a very, very talky version of The Seventh Sign. But yeah, it's fun. It feels very 80s where it's got like all these computer graphics on the screen. And it's all about science, but via way of computers and how science is, you know, and investigating religion and should science be venturing into religion and things like that. So it's got a lot of, and this is 1970s. So we're not even in the 80s yet, but they're using this very kind of digital, it feels like this was predecessing a lot of things to come in the 1980s. It feels very evil speak. It feels very Seventh Sign. A lot of the religious horrors. I still have no damn clue why it's on the video nastiest list. It's basically just a really talky, religious cult movie.
So, probably a lot of that is timing, right? Like it probably, if you came out right in that period, you're just going to get lumped in with a lot of that, I would guess.
Yeah, and I have a feeling that was the issue, is that, you know, 1975 released under the name Suicide Cult, and the poster does have that aforementioned butt on it, where you see this really sexy Jesus-looking evil dude holding up a naked virgin or naked girl, and I don't know if she's a virgin. They didn't state that in the movie. I don't want to judge, but you see her butt, and so I guess that they looked at that and they were like, you know, naked looking Jesus dude and butt Suicide Cult, it's on there. So yeah.
Wait, you told me one cheek only.
When I texted you about it last night, there was a quarter of a cheek only. you see a little bit more later, but not much.
But dude, quarter cheek in the pandemic is enough. I'll tell you, when we're on lockdown, quarter cheek is it.
So yeah, The Astrologer, it's definitely worth a watch if you're a 1970s purist, if you're into kind of your exploitation cinema from the time, if you're into your religious horrors. And so that is available now from Severin.
Nice. One thing I wanted to talk about really quick, you know, because every once in a while I will drop a good comic book recommendation or two. I just finished Vault Comics, bear with me with the title because it feels like there's many. It's called Cult Classic Creature Feature. And I'm hoping the kind of cult classic banner head will pave the way for more miniseries, but the under creature feature, my Siri is going off. Stop Siri. Under creature feature, what creature feature is about is a small town in America that is besieged by a giant tentacle monster. Becca, I hope you're listening up.
I'm in.
Crashes to Earth, lands in a lake, and unleashes a wave of slugs throughout the town. So it's got a little bit of Night of the Creeps, a little bit of Slither. And what you do is you follow these middle school kids in the first five pages who go off to set, you know, find out what crashed in a lake. And within those first five pages, every single one of those middle schoolers is grabbed by a tentacle and their skin is torn off and they're eaten alive. And when you realize, this comic's pulling no punches, you realize that everybody you're introduced to is susceptible to death. Everybody you kind of have a hero, but you're not sure if he's safe throughout the whole thing. But basically you're following this high schooler, this kind of football kid. You're following a horror host. You're following a few people around town as these slugs take over the town. And if one of these slugs gets inside you, you become violently ill, and then your skeleton sheds its skin and runs amok like a zombie. So it's one of those kind of like fun kitchen sink horror films or horror comics that is just a blast. And I think it's like five issues. I just finished it. And I highly recommend it. Vault Comics, Cult Classic Creature Feature. It's fantastic.
That sounds wonderful and exactly what I need right now.
Yeah. It's a blast. And I don't think the collection, the trade paperback, comes out until May, but I've been turning to Comixology for a lot of my purchases these days just to save space, save paper, and just get my instant comic book gratification.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, I think we should also add some book recs as we go, and then in this period, once we, you know, not necessarily right now, but I think people are with the downtime, some more reading could be on the charts here.
I was going to say, sorry, Becca, Adam Caesar's Corn in a Clown, Clown in a Cornfield, which is his upcoming YA horror book, and I am having a blast with it.
Oh, that's awesome.
I don't want to go too much into it just yet because it's all still character setup and stuff, but I'm presuming that there is a killer clown, and I'm presuming that there's a cornfield in there somewhere.
Yeah, I started reading People Still Live in Cashtown Corners, it's the same author who wrote Pontypool Changes Everything, Tony
shit.
Burgess.
Yeah.
This book is so fucking disturbing. I had to stop, and I know I will dare myself to get back into it, but it's about this tiny, tiny little town with just a couple people in it, and one day one of the people who lives there just snaps and starts eating everybody in the town. And it just goes like full rampage, killing them and eating them. Oh. And it's written kind of out of order, so you know what's happening before you realize why it's happening. And it's really disjointed, but it's, I read the first couple of chapters and it got really intense and really gruesome, and I had to stop and back off. And I know I'm going to get back into it sometime this week, but yeah, it's really good.
What was the last time you read a book that like legitimately grossed you out?
A lot. Well, I mean, it's graphic novels, but like there have been some of the Junji Itos where I've been like, I can't look at this. Like Holes was one of them. Legitimately grossed me out. That's a good question.
I think American Psycho, I was living in New York in like the mid to late 90s, and I picked up American Psycho, and I think that was legitimately the first time I had read something, and the last time I'd read something that I just like physically gagged. And I remember hitting some of those nastier points when I was on the subway, and I just remember people looking at me because I was just like, oh my God, like the gerbil.
The rats. Yeah, the gerbil.
The gerbil, and then like,
The girl's breasts with the what are the things to explode them? Yeah, it's really disturbing.
Yeah,
and that just made me remember one of mine, where I remember reading it in public and being like, "Oh my god, Haunt by Chuck Palahniuk."
Yes. I couldn't do it.
Chapter. Yeah. I remember sitting and reading that. I think I was in like a coffee shop or a diner, but I remember being like, I could feel myself turning white and sweating while reading it, and I had to put it down because I knew I was going to get like faint at the table.
I could not get past the pool part. I put the book down. I couldn't do it.
That was intense.
Yeah. Oh, and do we have Rob?
Hello.
Oh my god. Rob has come out of quarantine. His voice has come out of quarantine.
The composer maniac Rob. Let's do it.
Can you guys hear me okay this time?
Yeah, we hear you great.
Sounds fantastic.
That's so bizarre.
I was
having technical difficulties.
Holy cow. It's a comeback.
But I'm your guest
now. What have you seen? What have you seen, Rob Galuza?
Yeah, what are you doing?
Well, I am living in fear, like the rest of us, I guess. I'm trying not to panic, but at the same time, I feel like Egon in Ghostbusters, where he's like, I'm just terrified beyond the capacity for rational thought. every cough, everything just feels, you know, like, oh, could this be it? But, I'm trying to remain distracted. I will give a shout out to Fangoria editor in chief, Phil Nobile, who recommended the Vidmark app on Roku, which I think I texted you guys about. It is excellent. It's basically a free app. It shows movies with ads, and it's got a lot of stuff from the Lionsgate library. So all the Saw movies, the Ginger Snap sequels, Return of the Living Dead sequels, every episode of Masters of Horror, the show Monsters, all four seasons of Alf, The Dead Zone, the Anthony Michael Hall one, which I loved and been meaning to revisit. But I watched Riding the Bullet, which is Mick Garris' film based on a Stephen King story. And not that it's hard to get, but it's only available on DVD, and it has been pretty tricky to come by as of late. And it's one of the few of Mick Garris' movies I really wanted to check out because I know he's talked about this personally, that he lost one of his brothers several years back, and it was around the time that he did that movie. So that story really spoke to him, this whole story of loss. It's basically this student, kind of this art student who attempts suicide in the beginning of the film and doesn't succeed, thankfully, and then gets word that his mom is sick and this might be it. And so he kind of hits the road and starts hitchhiking, trying to make it to see his mom in the hospital before the inevitable happens. And on the way there, he's kind of, I don't know if it's really surreal and kind of like Twilight Zone-esque, where he gets picked up by David Arquette at one point, and it's almost like this very surreal, like almost like ghosts are picking him up along the way.
Nice.
It's a really cool movie. It's kind of, again, it's a little bit obscure, but the version that's on this Vidmark app is an HD transfer of it. It looks beautiful. And you know, it's got ads. I mean, you have to sit through ads, but having access to a lot of that stuff from the Lionsgate library, that's kind of tough to come by, including Riding the Bullet, is kind of my favorite discovery of the week. I'm definitely going to dip in there. They have all three Cube movies. I've never seen the second or third Cube, so I think I'm going to do a triple feature of those.
There's interesting stuff in both of them. Neither of them by any stretch compare to the first, but there's definitely interesting ideas that they're exploring in both of the sequels.
Yeah, so that's I'm really excited about that. That's one of the joys is kind of finding new apps.
Yeah, I was super bummed because when I saw you guys all talking about it, I went on to my Apple TV to try to download it, but it's only a Roku thing.
Oh, Roku's awesome.
Oh, Roku.
Yeah, it is. Other than that, a few things. I know Elric recently spoke about this, but I love Shining. There's no reason that we can't talk about certain titles again. I finally broke out my Blu-ray of Road Games, the Richard Franklin movie. Mm-hmm. And I have the Umbrella one, which is the Australian company that put it out. It's an all-region release. But I know Scream Factory also just put this out. And I revisit it every couple of years. This is the movie that Richard Franklin made right before Psycho 2 and after Patrick. It's got Stacey Keach, who is a truck driver in Australia. He's got a dingo in the car that he talks to. It's kind of like his buddy that he plays games with. And he picks up a hitchhiker, Jamie Lee Curtis. And he sees some strange stuff on the road and is alerted that there is a serial killer that is picking up hitchhikers, and he's kind of convinced that he's already crossed paths with this guy. And it's really creepy just the way he sets him up and the way that Richard Franklin shoots him, because the serial killer travels with a acoustic guitar. And so one of the ways that he kills his victims is he comes up behind them with a guitar string and just strangles them with it. It's really creepy and bizarre. But it's also, there's some really great, suspense, set pieces all throughout. And I know, I think I was texting Elric not too long about this. Like, I like Stacy Keach, but I just don't understand how he became a leading man.
This might be the biggest thing we'll ever disagree on. Because when you said that, I was like, that's exactly why he's a great leading man. Because he looks like the side character, but he's just, I don't know, this in Fat City. I know it was Fat City that you're watching.
Yeah, and I'm like, but yeah, like, so that's the thing. I'm like, when, I mean, I miss a world where a dude like Stacy Keach could be the lead.
Well, that's the 70s, right? Movies, the 70s were a lot of these kind of actors who were more offbeat or damaged looking, or even the lead of Exorcist, you know, I think in some ways is playing that kind of casting. Somebody who would traditionally be a side character. I love it. And especially in this one, I think this is actually him at his maybe most charismatic.
Yeah, no, he's very good because he's basically talking to his dog, you know, his dingo the entire time. And that's the thing, you're on screen driving a truck, you gotta somehow make that charismatic. And he's actually really, really good in the movie. So, I love this flick. And also it's like, I think Richard Franklin was really underrated. I know a lot of people obviously cite Brian De Palma as kind of like the Hitchcock auteur, but like, I think Richard Franklin, and obviously because of Psycho 2 as well, he was kind of doing Hitchcock with that
Cloak and Dagger.
Cloak and Dagger. This Patrick, even FX2 later on. Like he was like doing the 70s, 80s version of Hitchcock. It's really cool.
It's like, and it's so, more like De Palma's like souped up Hitchcock doing his own souped up sexual. I feel like what De Palma brings to movies is where Hitchcock wasn't allowed to go any further, De Palma got to finish that picture. Like, sure. Like Hitchcock wants to do that. Hitchcock wanted to show you pornography if it was up to him, but he couldn't because of, you know, classification. So instead De Palma gets to do that. But I agree. I think Franklin is way more tracing within the lines of Hitchcock and classic thriller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so again, I mean, you can get the Umbrella one fairly inexpensively, but Scream Factory also just put this out, and it's just one of those great thrillers that I revisit every couple years, and you know, Jamie Lee is great in it. This is like, she's still post Scream Queen, but not quite as big a breakout star. I've never heard her talk too positively about this movie, and I think a big part of it, they were talking on the special features how she was basically like, besides Stacy Keach, who I'm not exactly sure where he's from, but because they shot in Australia, they gave her a lot of trouble for being, you know, the name actress they went with. Like, a lot of the producers and people were not very pleasant to her because they really didn't want her in the movie. They wanted an Australian name to kind of keep it in house. Mm-hmm. So she's still great in it regardless. I mean, Jamie Lee is always pretty great. So, if you haven't seen Rogue Games, I recommend this one highly.
No, I've always loved this movie. This is a great one.
Yeah. No, it's. I don't know if how calm. I feel like it's still, even though you're bringing it up, I think it's still way underseen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people definitely need to check it out. Right. Other than that, what did I miss from you guys? Anything?
I watched
Night Killer. We can't go back.
Yeah,
you can't go back, but just give me the bullet points.
Yeah, I'm doing so. Night Killer, Future Kill, The Astrologer, and Passion of Darkly Noon.
I'm not going to tell you. You're going to have to listen. But I do want to ask you about a movie, Rob. As a guest, Rob, I want to ask you about your viewing habits with a loved one who's on a different continent, involving other epidemics that could be shock and terror.
Ah, okay. So you want to ask about my video date with my fiance in France watching Birdemic? Yeah, I
that's
assume.
Correct. That's correct.
Well, so here's the thing: we talk every day via text and all that, but once a week we get together on video chat. Skype, Facebook is a good free video chat sort of deal. And just catch up on everything. And I thought, like, you know what? Why don't we try to watch a movie? Like, people do it all the time. Why don't we try?
Why didn't you choose a movie then?
I wanted to, but I'm a good fiance, so she's a big fan of The Room. She's always heard of Birdemic and wanted to see it because it's quote unquote like The Room. And we did our Severn episode a couple of weeks ago, and I made sure to grab two copies of Birdemic, one which I mailed to her and one which I kept here, specifically for the sole purpose of us syncing it up and watching it together. So we did. It is beyond words. It is not a movie. It is a terrible, terrible thing. It's an experience. She would not have finished it had I not teased her 15 minutes towards the end, being like, "This was your choice, so we're in it to the bitter end."
Did she like the $1 million deal? I love it when they close the deal for $1 million and they're all
high-fiving. Oh my god,
that's the greatest.
Yeah, movie. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if there's an actual plot to the movie. There's a guy who's dating a girl, so I guess it's like a love story. But he made a multi-million-dollar deal. And then it's not until like 40 minutes until the CG birds show up. And they're quite
you have
something.
Like a 20-minute dance scene. So that's really all you need, that dance scene.
Oh yeah. I love the dance scene with like they're the only two people in the bar being entertained by this guy. Yeah, it is something else. I will definitely not recommend it, but if you have a loved one in another country and you want to spice things up, maybe you could Skype and watch this movie together.
I'll just take this moment to say that my daughter is a producer on part two. I have no idea how, but she is a producer on part two.
Well, it's one of the stars of part two. Yeah. I can tell you.
Yeah. It was. We had the producer on Killer POV, right?
It was episode 4, like way, way back.
Because I'm in the movie. As the star, one of the stars of the film, I can tell you all about it. I'm in the background of that one shot. So, yeah.
Do I dare with Birdemic 2? Because that one's not available on Blu-ray.
You do not dare. You do not. let's be clear. And I like Birdemic. You do not.
Well, you know what's on I think it's on the Vidmark app is Camel Spiders. So if I want to watch you fighting yourself,
you do dare.
Guys, we want to recommend movies during these dark times that are going to uplift people. And I have to say Veronica, which is now available on iTunes.
I have it sitting on my desk. I am so excited to start.
Do just that. That's just the medicine you need.
Wait, Ryan, did you just say next week's homework is Veronica?
Yes, I did.
Oh, I think he did. I think he did. I'm in. I'll do it for next week.
We need a special sound effect for when is that homework?
Is that homework, guys?
It's like throwing down a gauntlet.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah. Yep, maybe that's next week's homework. Everybody, your assignment is to watch Veronica.
Veronica.
All right. Well, we'll see. How much is it to rent? Let's see.
I can lend you.
I unfortunately have some bad news. I don't think we're going to be joined by that guest.
Oh, no. Is Lee having some issues getting in?
I do not know. But I will investigate, but I don't think he's going to make it.
He's the invisible man.
Well, the world's ending, so.
But I will say,
it's not ending. Jesus.
I will say one of the really cool things that we've talked about, which hopefully you know we can make work, and I'm super excited about our guest next week. From a graphic novel standpoint, is that we can finally get some of the guests that we've always wanted to get on from other parts of the globe on to join us, because it's always been we have to wait for them to come to LA, and we figured we might as well take advantage of this time and try to get guests from other areas of the country and world if we can do it. So good thoughts, positive thoughts.
Yeah, and we don't want to up your thing, but there's a good chance De Palma, there's a good chance Abel Ferreira, Scorsese. You know, we've got our feelers now.
Elric, what about your good friend Quentin Tarantino, since you came through at a pinch?
Hey.
Hey.
All right. I work there. They're on pause as well right now. So the new Bev is on pause. We are, you know, I definitely agree when Ryan says the world will not end, but you do have to be smart and you do have to look out for each other because, that is the key to this ending early. And I think I, if ever I summed up one thing for horror people, it would be, if you want Halloween this year, we can get this over before Halloween. We can reclaim our October and, you know, summer is for losers. We want to get this clear for October. Okay. Let's be clear.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody, we obviously want you tuning in and being there with us as we all get through this and, you know, we're scheming some interesting plans to bring this community a little bit closer together, but, online, and hopefully we'll have some news as soon as we do a little bit of investigating. But we want you safe. We want you healthy. We want you. Oh, there's some weird person talking over my internet right now.
Yeah, I just heard that.
That was very weird. We want you healthy. We want you safe. We want you indoors, and we obviously do not want you being a part of the, you know, spreading of this awful, awful disease.
This is a message. This is a message.
Wait, I think I hear something crackling through from John Carpenter's.
This is from the
Prince of Darkness, rather. Yeah.
Wait, did you guys say who our potential guest was supposed to be?
Yes,
we did. That it was Lee. Yeah.
Maybe we should still advertise it as such so we get more hits.
But maybe this is genius marketing for Invisible Man. Maybe he is with us and just not speaking.
Oh, nicely done.
Touch my ear. Lee, is that you?
He's always been here. Well, and also, I do think this could also, for us, it could be a chance. I know we're working this on the fly, and so hopefully people roll with the tech difficulties. We put this up quickly because we don't want to go off.
Yeah.
But this could be a chance.
It can only improve from here, guys. It will get better.
But it could be a chance to not have some of them be less, focused on our guests, and maybe we'll count down some cool lists and things like that.
Give us a chance to go inward. Yes. We want to give you a distraction from all the craziness. So allow us to do that for you. You could find us on Twitter, so if you have any suggestions on things you'd like to hear, reach out to us. We're always
we could probably do a whole episode of just Q&A. Like, we could probably open it up for questions and fill a whole one with really good topics. So
totally
we are open in this period, but we don't want to disappear from your lives as much as possible.
Guys, even going back
tweeting while we're recording.
I did tweet while we were recording.
He did. I saw that go up and I responded to it, so I did it too. But even just talking about what we were talking about before, Rye, with the books, even just counting down like our five personal fave horror novels and things like that, I think could be like really fun episodes to keep us moving online.
Yeah, exactly. All right, guys. I know I have to go be with my family, so listeners, thank you so much for tuning in.
Thank you, guys. Everyone be well.
Everybody be safe and be healthy. We'll talk soon.
I hope at the end of this you get this little Australian going, "Hey, where'd everyone go? You're mad, you bastards." The perfect end for Lee.
I'll track him down. All right, guys. Have a good night, everybody.
Have a good one.
Bye.
Tonight's episode of Shockwaves is brought to you by Fright Rags. Join us as Fright Rags unleashes their Evil Dead 1 and 2 collections this week, featuring highly anticipated reprints of classic designs, as well as brand new items like lounge pants and hats. All these groovy items are available exclusively at fright-rags.com. Shockwaves listeners can get 10% off when they use codes SHOCKWAVES2020. Again, that's SHOCKWAVES2020 for 10% off. Again, the website is fright-rags.com. Tonight's episode of Shockwaves is brought to you by Fangoria.com. It's getting a little crazy out there right now, so Fangoria is offering a free 2-month digital membership to everyone. Go to Fangoria.com for more information and make an account. Then pore over all the exclusive articles, interviews, and reviews on the site, as well as original video content and podcasts. You'll even have access to high-resolution scans of the first 15 issues of the original run of Fangoria magazine, and counting. Go to Fangoria.com now and start your free digital membership. And if you're looking to add to your social distancing watch list, Fangoria's latest movie, VFW, is now available to stream on demand, and Satanic Panic is now available to watch on Shudder.
Tonight's episode of Shockwaves is also brought to you by Wellgo Entertainment. From the writer and director of I Saw the Devil comes a film with bone-crunching, blood-spurting action, says Birth Movies Death. The Witch Subversion is a serious revenge thriller with kick-ass bloody action, now on digital, Blu-ray, and DVD from Wellgo Entertainment. And if you're interested in advertising on Shockwaves, email us at shockwaves@blumhouse.com for more info. That is shockwaves@blumhouse.com.
Fangoria and Blumhouse present Shockwaves. Shockwaves is a member of the Fangoria Podcast Network, hosted and produced by Rob Galuzzo, Elric Kane, Ryan Turek, and Rebecca McKendry. Sound recording, mixing, and editing by Ernie Hurtado. Music by Gregory S. Burkhart. Logo art and design by Aaron Crawford. For Fangoria, Dallas Danier, Phil Nobile Jr., Jessica Sapp of Amer, Brandon Wynardi, Natasha Pacetta, and Rob Galuzzo.